Hello, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast that is exclusively available to you as a Circle member. These episodes are a deeper dive down the holistic trauma healing rabbit hole. You will find yourself challenged, empowered, inspired, and maybe even a little bit uncomfortable. But remember, we're getting to the root of how trauma has affected every aspect of your existence, and that's not always quick or easy. By being part of the Trauma Healer Circle, you are already consciously creating your best possible reality and weaving a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past. I'm so honored you're in my circle. Hello, Trauma Healer Circle. Welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. I just got home from a lovely walk in the woods with my best friend, Honor. We were harvesting acorns to give to our friend, Corey, who is raising pigs for both of us. And those are going to be butchered in probably just a couple months. And we do that all together. And we come together, just our little community, and butcher pigs and process meat and get it all wrapped up and packaged up for the freezer. And it's a really good time. But pigs love acorns, and we were on this walk, and the oak trees in the woods behind Honor's house were just like dropping acorns all over the forest floor. So we just spent like an hour and a half filling up grocery bags with acorns. And I know that may sound really silly, but it's like, for us, it's like a great way to relax and spend time in the woods and be together and also accomplish something like really useful and purposeful. It's like a triple word score or something like that. So anyway, I just got home from that and I turned on the recorder and I drew you a card and here we are. By the way, the card drawing thing, I'm doing that for the public podcast, and I think in August I started doing it for y'all. If you find the card, actually, I'm not even going to do an if. Let me know in the forum if you are enjoying the card pulling or not. Just let me know. You're not going to hurt my feelings if you're like, no, Lindsay, this isn't helpful. It's actually a distraction from the episode. You're not going to hurt my feelings. I just want to know if it's something that you feel is supportive of you, if it resonates, or if it doesn't, or maybe you just are neutral about it. So maybe just let me know in the forum. That would be really helpful. But I did draw a card for you this time. I drew from my Starseed Oracle deck. I will link to it below. And the card I drew is this like beautiful. The art in all of these cards is beautiful, but this one's really beautiful. It's called Star Bathing, and it's about the light body, crystal grid, transmission, and activation. So here is the message of this card. The stars are constantly showering emanations onto the crystalline grid of the earth. When things are in balance, the planet also sends information back up to the stars. Many starseeds have come to Earth at this time to help shift the planet vibrationally, to activate the ancient codes of wisdom that humanity has forgotten, and all of that information is stored in the crystalline grid. If you pull this card, you may be being called to begin working with the stars and the crystalline grid of the Earth. Some people believe that the crystalline grid of the Earth anchors divine cosmic frequencies onto the planet. You may be guided to journey to particular places on Earth to unlock these cosmic codes with your presence. You may also be interested in a practice called star bathing. This card commonly arises because you're here to connect with the crystalline grid of the Earth, either in your hometown or by traveling to other places without quite knowing why. It can also mean that your light body, the energy body in its highest form, is being activated. If this resonates, take things extra slow in order to integrate this change of vibration. And then there is an activation if you would like to repeat it after me. I open myself up to receiving the wisdom of the crystalline grid beneath me. May the stars and the earth inform and heal me, and as they do, may it heal the earth too. Okay, so I hope that was supportive. And I have decided in this bonus episode to talk about my own issues with control and healing control, releasing control. Dun, da, da, da. So I think I've pretty much told everyone that I and my husband are currently in Evelyn's Relationship Rebirth Program. For those of you who may be new to the circle or who aren't familiar with who Evelyn Hale is, she is one of our Trauma Healers Circle members, and she is also a trauma coach. And so my husband and I hired Evelyn back in July to do her 12-week Relationship Rebirth Program, and it's just been transformational. We're halfway through it, and it's already just been so amazing. So grateful. So Evelyn, if you're listening, thank you. But one of the issues that has come up for me pretty consistently throughout this entire 6-week process is it's almost an insatiable need and compulsion that I have to control, to step in and try to take over, to try to get the situation to turn out how I want it to turn out. And I've always known that control is an issue for me. It's been something that has been a point of contention for my husband and I for several years. Just for a number of years, I was really nagging towards him. I mothered him and treated him like a child instead of like my partner. And let's be honest, nobody wants to fuck their mom. So obviously you can see like there were challenges with that. But then as I learned to quit nagging as much, I like became controlling in other ways, like being really needy or wanting to control how we spend our time or who comes over to our house and how long they stay or things about my environment. Just I've learned, I already knew this before working with Evelyn, but Evelyn has just shown a big flashing light on the ways in which I still experience a lot of sensitivity to my environment. Even though I have worked very hard to widen the window of tolerance for my nervous system to be able to tolerate things that are uncomfortable, I still have a pretty significant amount of sensitivity to my environment. And oftentimes, in an effort to keep myself comfortable or protect myself from feeling the sensitivity in my environment, I resort to picking back up what I know appears to be working for me, which is to control the situation. And as I've been working with Evelyn these past 6 weeks, she's challenged me to give up control. Like, how can I release control even in a really small way? And it's working. I think because of where I'm at in my journey, and I don't say this to brag at all, I think that there are certain points in our journey where we are just not ready to jump over certain hurdles. And I think the control issue for me is something that I've always known was a hurdle, but I needed the help of a coach like Evelyn and the motivation of improving my relationship with David in order to really realize how much of an issue it still is for me, and that I'm now at a place in my journey where I can jump over that hurdle. So that's what I'm working on trying to do. And it hasn't been easy. So I just thought, I'm probably not the only one of us who deals with control. I know many of you have told me privately that either you're in a relationship with someone who feels controlling or you are a controller in your relationship. So I'm pretty sure this topic is probably going to apply to just about all of you. And if it doesn't, please pop into the forum and tell us what your secret is. So first, I want to say what I think control is tied to for me. So I think the first thing that control is tied to for me is perfectionism. I think that I have these sort of impossible standards and expectations for myself that I impose on myself. No one else imposes them on me, but I impose them on myself. And if they aren't met, I feel like it's a reflection of me or that I'm a failure somehow or I didn't measure up. And so if I can maintain control, then I won't fail. If I'm like always on top of things, if I'm never letting anyone in my family fail, if I'm not giving my children the opportunity to fail, like then we don't have to deal with the consequences of all of that because consequences are a big mess. Nobody wants to deal with consequences. And so I try to carry the load for everyone. And it stems from this like perfectionistic need to maintain control, or this controlling need to maintain perfectionism. It's like a chicken or the egg situation. I don't know which came first. And it's interesting because I don't really remember like obvious ways that my mom was controlling in my childhood. One big way that I feel like I was controlled was that my mom wanted me to be a baton twirler. And she put me in twirling lessons when I was like 6 years old. And I think I liked it. I don't ever remember being like, "Mom, I love twirling. I just want to keep doing it." I don't remember being like that about it, but I also don't remember hating it. But my mom was a twirler in high school, and her family was poor, and she really liked twirling, and it was something she was really good at. And I think that she would have liked to have gone farther with it if she had the resources and the opportunities to do that. And so I think that her enrolling me in twirling lessons was the classic living through me vicariously. And so what started out as lessons when I was six turned into competitions by the time I was seven. I was having custom-made twirling costumes, and we were investing money in batons and shoes and bags and traveling to competitions. And I traveled all over the United States for competitions. I competed at a national level. I was actually a really good baton twirler. But at a certain point, it got to be something that was expected of me to do. And I can remember getting off the school bus and putting my stuff down. And I was trained to get off the bus, put my stuff down, and immediately say, "Is there anything I can do to help?" Because most often my mom was in the kitchen, like getting dinner ready or something. "Is there anything I can do to help?" And if she wasn't passive aggressive that day, and if there wasn't anything I could do to help that day, then the understood next thing was that I changed my clothes, I put on my workout clothes, and my mom would drive me to the local college that had a gym, and I had a pass so that I could go in there and I could practice in the gym. And that was before I did homework. That was before like anything recreational happened, anything extracurricular. I did my twirling practice first. And my mom was very like adamant about that. And I can understand why. She was investing a lot of time and money into this sport that I was into, or that she was into for me, or that we were both into, or that we had this really weird enmeshed relationship around. I'm not really entirely sure. I probably need to unpack that more. But it took over. It took over my childhood. And I remember being in like 7th and 8th grade in PE class and playing volleyball and being really good at volleyball. And the PE teacher, who was also a volleyball coach, was like, "Lindsay, you should try out for the volleyball team. You would make it. You're good." And I remember really liking volleyball and feeling like I was good at it and feeling like it was fun, which was something that twirling had ceased to be for me. Like by the time I had been twirling for 5 or 6 years, it wasn't as much fun anymore. There were certain things about it that were fun, but like overall, the theme of twirling for me was not one of fun and enjoyment. It was one of busting my ass and performing. And I went home. I remember going home after that PE day and telling my mom, "I want to try out for the volleyball team. I'm really good at it, Mom. I really want to play volleyball." And I wasn't allowed to because it would interfere with my twirling. Like the games would interfere with my competitions. The volleyball practices after school would interfere with my twirling practice. Like it just didn't fit. That wasn't what my mom wanted me to do. And she made sure that it didn't fit into my life or into the way she was shaping my life and my schedule to be. So that's a long and windy way of just saying that's the way that I feel like my mom was controlling over me, like managing my time and my extracurricular activities, not letting me play the sports I wanted to play. I missed a lot of weekends like with friends because I had to do a twirling competition or I had to go to a lesson. Like my twirling coach lived 2 hours one way away And so every other Saturday, like that was what I did. So I didn't get to do like sleepovers and slumber parties and like weekend trips with people. I didn't get to do that because I had to go to twirling lessons. So anyway, that was how I remember my mom being controlling, and that the level of control that she had over me translated into perfectionism. So I had to be the best. Because she was investing all of this money, I had to be the best. I had to win competitions. And if I didn't do very well in a competition or even at a lesson, like I would hear about it. We're spending all this money for you to be able to do this, and you need to practice more. You need to work harder. Don't get so distracted, like stuff like that. So that's the element from my mom, I think. The element from my stepdad is the fear element. And that is the other thing that I believe control is tied to for me. So the first thing I think control is tied to is perfectionism. And the second thing is fear. And I think fear is at the root of perfectionism as well. So I'm saying all of this to say that I think fear is at the root of control, period. But I think for me anyway, it's also tied into perfectionism. So for you, if control is an issue for you and perfectionism isn't, maybe control is tied to something else. Like maybe it's tied to like how others perceive you or feeling unworthy or having a fear of like abandonment or rejection in relationships. So you try to control the other person. I don't know what it's rooted in for you. I can just tell you what it is for me. And for me, it was perfectionism from my mom. And then the root of it was fear from my stepdad. And my stepdad was, y'all have heard me talk about him on the podcast before, that he's not my favorite person in the world. He did a lot of really shitty things to me and to my stepbrother and my younger half brother. He did a lot of really shitty things. He was angry. He was a dry drunk who never went to AA, but went to church all the time, but didn't, like, you couldn't tell he went to church except for whenever he was at church, like putting on his church face. But I was like scared of my stepfather. I've shared with y'all before that I have a big mouth. Like I was always a smart aleck. I was a very little child. Like I was a tiny child. But I had a big mouth, and he used to say, like, his favorite thing to say to me whenever I would open my mouth was that I let my alligator mouth overload my hummingbird butt, or ass is what he would say. But yeah, so it was just like silencing me, shaming me for talking back or questioning his authority, which I did all the time. But I was afraid of him because when we didn't do what he wanted us to do, like he loved to hear the sound of his leather belt as it zipped through his belt loops. And then he just went to swinging, and whatever he hit is what he hit. And it didn't matter if it was our butts or our legs or our backs, or it didn't matter. It didn't matter. And so there was a lot of fear in that. I couldn't do anything wrong because if I did, this was going to be the quote unquote consequence. So I had to maintain a certain behavior and a certain attitude. I had to maintain control over myself and over my environment so that he wouldn't rip the belt off and start swinging. So I wasn't ever told to clean my room. Like it was just understood that I had to keep my room like perfectly clean. So my parents didn't have to control me in that way, but I think my stepfather tried to control me in an even more nefarious way, which wasn't like tangible things like cleaning my room or going to twirling practice or whatever else. It was the like intangible things. Like he tried to control like my feeling of safety. He tried to control my relationship with my mom and my access to my mom. He tried to control my time. I wasn't, like I said, I wasn't really allowed to do sleepovers and stuff like that. And it wasn't just because I was twirling. It was because my stepfather didn't believe that kids needed to be kids. Like he would tell us on a regular basis, the only reason I had you was to work. And we lived on a horse ranch with over 30 horses at one point. And so there's a lot of work to do. That's a lot of shit to shovel out of stalls. That's a lot of hay to buck. That's a lot of horses to feed. That's a lot of horses to brush. That's a lot of horses to ride. There was never something like there was never time where we just didn't do anything. Never. And so I had to like work and then be told that my only value to this person and to this family was being able to work and produce So again, there's a lot of productivity issues and stuff. It's all messy, right? Like we can't put it into neat categories for, okay, this is the feeling and this is why it was caused and this is how we fix it. Like we can't make it nice and neat that way. It won't work. And so I'm just trying to pull out the common threads and like the high notes or the major notes of where I think control stems from for me. So I think it's perfectionism from my mom, like the expectations that I had to be the best twirler and I also had to make the best grades. And then from my stepfather, it was just like, if I didn't maintain this control over my environment by keeping my room clean or by cleaning the house, which I did frequently, or by making sure I did my chores, like feeding the horses and bucking the hay and shoveling the stalls and all of that. If I didn't stay on top of myself, things were not going to go well for me. There was going to be a physical injury to my body or my brother's bodies, and frequently all of our bodies. So that's where I think it's rooted in for me, is perfectionism, which is linked to fear, and the underlying thread for both control and perfectionism is fear. Okay, it took me 21 minutes to explain that. So I hope that wasn't too like long and windy. I just have a few notes here and most of it is just me like looking at my notes and then riffing. Hopefully this is making sense. But like the way in which control has manifested in my life isn't in quote unquote bad ways. So for instance, when I was newly married, I kept an immaculate house. Like I was obsessive about cleaning. I would vacuum the floor and leave tracks in the carpet and then get upset if somebody walked through the vacuum tracks and messed them up. I would pour bleach into an old coffee cup and get an old toothbrush and get on my hands and knees and scrub our white tile grout to turn it white again and like get rid of the stains in every room of our house, like on the inside of a kitchen cabinet or a bathroom cabinet or on the inside of a closet door or a wardrobe door. I would have a little list that I had written with things that I did every day in that room and then things I did every week in that room to clean. Like I had cleaning task lists taped up inside cabinet doors in every room of my house. And every day I went to each room and I did the things. And I just didn't feel like I could even function in a messy house. Like I made my bed every single day. I made my kids' beds every single day until they were old enough to learn how to make their own beds. And then I tasked them with making their own beds every single day. Like if anyone was coming over to my house, then the obsession with cleaning and perfectionism about my house would like multiply times 10. If somebody was coming over, they were not going to see even a crumb on the table or on the floor. They were not going to see a mark on a baseboard. They were not going to see, like they could have white gloved my whole house and it would have passed the test. Extreme perfectionism. But also I realized when we moved to Minnesota, that need and compulsion to clean was perfectionism rooted in control, because I had so much dysregulation in my body. And at that point, it hadn't fully manifested physically yet. I had some like weird, chronic, mysterious symptoms going on, but it wasn't like full blown. It got to be in 2018. And so I realized now that I was just feeling this like buzzing in my body because I didn't know how to sit still and I couldn't handle anything being out of place, or it literally felt like a threat. And of course, I wasn't conscious of this at the time. I wouldn't have said, if the couch pillows aren't lined up properly, I feel threatened. I didn't have any awareness of it. And it wasn't like I felt threatened, like I was going to die. It was like a threat to who I was as a person. And anytime my environment was chaos, my mind felt like chaos. Like I couldn't think clearly. It was almost like in order to be productive, I had to clean my whole house first. And then I could be like, okay, now I can be quote unquote creative. Now I can be productive. Now I can actually accomplish something because I got the house clean. I got that. But then it was again rooted in what people would think of me if they came over and something in my house was out of place or if something about me was out of place. So I was one of those women who got up every day and I did my hair with the whole like blow drying with the round brush and the flat iron. And I did my makeup every day and I put on like cute clothes every day. And every day, even though I was home with two babies and nobody was going to come and see me, and it was just me and these two babies, like every day I did that. And it had nothing to do with wanting to feel like the best version of myself. So please, if that is you, if you get dressed and ready every single day, I am not criticizing you. I'm just telling you, for me, it wasn't rooted in embodying my highest self. It was rooted in perfectionism and control over my own body. Yeah, I just had all of this just control. And I tried to maintain it over my environment. I tried to maintain it over my husband. I tried to maintain it over, like, I couldn't really get away with being controlling over my friends or people I went to church with or anything like that. But I did get away with it with David. And in a lot of ways, after I was grown up, my role with my mom flipped. And instead of her trying to control me, I was trying to control my mom. And I've since had to like go back and apologize for that because I realized that it was rooted in like fear of how others would perceive her. Like for instance, if my mom would wear a shirt that was too low cut and her cleavage would show, I would pull her shirt up and be like, you need to keep yourself covered or whatever. And my mom told me, she was like, I never understood why you did that. I just thought that there was something wrong with me. And I was like, I'm so sorry, mom. I had all of these like messages from the church about modesty and our bodies. And I was ashamed of you showing like this cleavage. And it was a way for me to silence you and quiet you and control you because I was threatened by you in some way. So anyway, those are just some of the ways that like control has manifested in my life and some of the roots of it in my life. And I know there's a lot more, like I could keep going, but I'm already 27 minutes into this and I feel like that's all I've talked about so far. What I really want to get to next is how I am learning to release. So in working with Evelyn, she has tasked me with just releasing control. What does it feel like in your body to not control something? What does it feel like in your body to watch your kids miss an appointment or not do something that you asked them to do or not, whatever it is, what does it feel like to just let that happen and not need to correct anybody? So we started experimenting with some small ways that I could let go of control. And I, at this point now, 6 weeks into coaching, I'm literally looking for like any opportunity to let go of control. So I think it's happening in small and big ways now. But so one of the ways that I noticed this last weekend, I made some progress in giving up control. And what happened was that my daughter had two of her friends over to spend the night on Friday night. And they had a lovely time. They got up on Saturday morning. And normally on Saturday morning, like they would eat a late breakfast and maybe like play or color. They don't color, they draw, but whatever. And then the girls' parents would come and get them at like noon or 2 in the afternoon or something, or we would take them home. At 10 a.m. on Saturday morning, whenever I thought we were eating and getting ready for the girls who slept over to go home, they all three were like, can we stay another night? Like, we want to stay another night. And I immediately felt like the constriction in my body because I, like, it wasn't even on my radar for them to stay another night. It was like, I don't even like having people stay in my house a lot anyway. And for me, it's like not an immediate hell yes for people to stay over because it's like a whole, when you have people staying at your house, it's just there are extra things that you have to do and make sure for your guests and for their comfort and whatever, which is fine. Sometimes I don't want to do that 2 nights in a row for my daughter's friends. But I was like making breakfast and I was listening to this happening and my husband was in the dining room with them and he, without asking me, he said, sure. And I felt the resistance in my body even more. But normally I would go into, you should have asked me before you said yes to the girls. You really should have asked me. And I'm not saying that would have been wrong. If that's a boundary that I need to set, I feel really confident in my ability to set it with my husband. But I felt myself get ready to do that. And then I was like in awareness, which meant I knew that in that moment I was experiencing an opportunity to release control and practice what it is I'm trying to heal. It's so amazing to me how the universe, when you're actively working on healing something, it brings it up over and over because it's like it wants to fast track you. So it's, I'm going to give you every opportunity to pick control back up. And if you're in awareness, you're going to put it back down. You're going to release it. You're going to let it go. And in this way, you're like leveling up and you're healing as you're doing it. I don't ever underestimate the power of the small little acts of awareness that you have. Don't ever underestimate them, because that is how you widen your window of tolerance to not being a control freak. It starts with small acts of letting go of control. So this in awareness felt like, okay, all right, I feel myself like constricting. I feel myself wanting to say no. I feel myself like trying to push an agenda. I don't even have plans this weekend, but all of a sudden my body is just, no, like we have all kinds of stuff to do this weekend. I didn't actually, but because of the dysregulated, activated state that my nervous system was in, like my body was trying to come up with excuses, or my body was sending messages to my mind. And then my mind was interpreting those signals as, I've got to control, like I've got to come up with plans. I've got to make a reason or an excuse why these girls can't spend the night again. And of course, because I was in awareness, I realized it, because you can catch all kinds of things when you're in awareness, if you're willing to. And I was like, like I'm gritting my teeth as I'm doing, making those noises, like wanting to bite my tongue and like going back and forth between biting my tongue and wanting to say something and biting my tongue and wanting to say something. And this all happened in a matter of like microseconds. This whole process that has taken me like 4 minutes to describe actually happened in less than 60 seconds. This is how fast the nervous system works sometimes, and why it's so hard to stay in awareness. It's so hard. And this is why, because those feelings in our body are occurring in nanoseconds, and that information is being sent to the brain. And then the mind comes in and takes over, and it produces an excuse or a reaction or a wound or like whatever it is. So that's what was coming up for me in like the span of less than 60 seconds. But because I was in awareness, I was like, okay, I don't actually have plans this weekend. I don't actually have a good reason why these girls can't stay another night. And it, maybe if my kid was like 5 or 6 and I was worried about them being tired and bedtimes and whatever, maybe that would be a good reason. But my daughter is 16. Like I can't even make up an excuse as to why it's not a good idea for the girls to stay the night again. It's just that it's a disruption in my routine. It creates more in my environment that I am sensitive to, because they are loud and I am sensitive to loudness. And so it is overstimulating to me when these two extra girls are in my house and they're giggling and laughing. I love that my daughter's having a good time. And also it's slightly dysregulating to me. That's just the reality, right? That's the reality. It's complex. It's not binary. Anyway, I was just like, this is a way that I can give up control. I don't actually have a reason why these girls can't stay the night. We don't have anything going on. I'm not having to take care of them. They're teenagers. They're basically taking care of themselves. I don't have a good reason. So I didn't even say anything. Like my husband told them, okay. I turned around and looked at him. And then I looked back and I went back to making breakfast. So that's one small way. And I know the way I described it doesn't make it sound small, but compared to the other ways that I try to take control, that one small act of awareness led to me releasing control, which was even just a baby step. Even just the baby steps matter. It was a baby step towards being able to let go of bigger things. Another small act of letting go of control was asking my husband to take our kids to the ear, nose, and throat doctor back in August. And normally I would be the one that would take my kids to the doctor. I would be the one who talks to the doctor. I would be the one who makes the decision unless it's something crazy and it would require both of us to talk about. But David is pretty, he's always trusted me to make the decision for our kids. And if it's something that I don't know what to do about or I really feel like I need his input, we talk about it. But by and large, I'm pretty capable and confident and have the clearance to make decisions for my kids medically. And I've never missed a doctor's appointment. But I was like, this is a small way for me to release control. I can ask him to take the kids to this doctor's appointment. So he did it turn out exactly the way that I wanted it to? Nope. And there was even a moment in there while my husband was at the doctor with our two kids and I was at home, I just texted him to check in. Hey, how's it going? And whenever he told me and it wasn't what I wanted to hear, like I started texting furiously back. I even called the doctor's office while they were there and was like, my husband and kids are there right now. Here is what needs to happen. So that could have been a small act of releasing control if I would have just left it alone. But I was not in awareness. And I felt justified in taking control of that situation. And so I did. And it caused me a lot of stress, a lot more than it caused my husband or my kids. So that's two examples of like small ways that I've tried to release control. One, I was successful. The other one, I wasn't so successful. So I've had several other examples and I don't want to share them all with you now, but I just want you to know that I don't even really have a lesson in what I'm sharing today. I just want you to know that I struggle too. And I am still learning to be in awareness and practicing awareness. Even as far as I've come, and I'm so proud of the work that I've done, but there are still things. There are still things. And my controlling over other people doesn't just affect me, it affects them too. And that's not fair because they should have a choice. Yeah, control. For me, it's tied to perfectionism and it's ultimately rooted in fear. Maybe this gives you something to think about if control is something that you've struggled with. I can tell you, don't expect that you're just going to resolve that you're just not going to be controlling anymore, you're going to give up control. And that it's going to happen. Like, it won't happen. You are going to say you're going to do it. And then the next minute, you're going to have an opportunity to pick control back up. And you will pick it back up. I can just tell you, you will. But little by little, slowly by slowly, you start being in awareness more. You start noticing those patterns more. This is why I think it's invaluable to work with a coach. Because there are a lot of things about ourselves that we don't see. Like, we look in the mirror and we see certain flaws about ourselves, and then other flaws we're like completely oblivious to. And I don't really like calling control a flaw. It's like a trauma response, but it's a trauma response that I'm not going to be a victim to anymore. And I'm also not going to make it somebody else's fault. This is my responsibility. My choices, my behaviors, my words are affecting other people. And let's be honest, even if they're affecting no one else, which is unrealistic, but let's just say in a perfect world, my choices to control and nag other people weren't affecting them. I don't like who I am like that. I'm more activated. I'm more anxious. I'm more dysregulated in my body. I sleep worse. There's just all kinds of crap that I don't like. And I feel dissatisfied within myself and discontent. And I don't like it. So that's the side effects of control just in my body, not to even go into how it affects other people. So I don't have a lesson to share with you today. Like, I literally only have how I am working to release control. And I hope that it encourages you to know that you can have a spiritual, conscious podcast about healing shit like this and still deal with shit like this. You can be a coach who helps people deal with shit like this and still have it in yourself. And that doesn't make me an ineffective coach. Like, it's always easier to see what's going on in someone else than it is to see what's going on in ourselves. Like, it's always easier. Yeah, I think that's all I have to share with you today. Thank you for listening to me ramble on about my childhood and control issues. I would be interested if anyone has similar stories that they'd like to share in the forum, please do. And just know that I'm still struggling too sometimes. Like, I still have things that I'm healing. And I used to think that I would reach this magical point where I would pretty much have most of my shit figured out and I wouldn't necessarily need to be quote unquote healing anymore. And of course, I know now that was egoic. And now I'm just like, I would rather learn this lesson now in this lifetime than not learn it in this lifetime, really hurt my marriage and my relationship with my husband over it, as well as my children, and then come back in my next life and have to still learn the lesson. I'm going to have to learn this lesson either way. Yeah, there's my word of encouragement. You're going to have to learn either way. So you can either do it in this lifetime or you can wait and do it in another one. But the universe is going to make sure that you release control. It's going to make sure that you can just let go and let things be, let it be. And yeah, you might have to deal with consequences of people not doing what you want them to do or not showing up for you or dropping you. You might actually have to deal with those consequences. But I don't even think that those consequences are as bad as the overall feeling and energy of a person who needs to control everything. Like, I think that is worse than, yeah, I just think that's worse. That the consequences on you as an individual, I think, are worse. So anyway, that's all I have for you. I will see you in the forum, or I will see you on Instagram, or I will see you on an IG live. I'm really enjoying hanging out in this membership with all of you. Just a reminder that our September Trauma Healer Circle meeting is on Tuesday, September 28th at 7 p.m. And I will be having Rebecca Wiener McGregor, who is a high-level business coach and hypnotherapist, coming to our circle meeting to, I think she's going to lead us in some group hypnotherapy. It's going to be one of those where I show up just like you and learn along with you. So that's what's coming up for our circle call in September, which is the 28th at 7 p.m. Central. And yeah, that's all I have. So I hope this was supportive for you. And if there's any other topics that you'd like for me to cover in bonus podcast episodes, please let me know. Again, you can do that in the forum. Or you can email me, hey@lindsaylockett.com, but I would prefer the forum. But yeah, suggest topics. If one of you wants to come on, like Evelyn did last month, and be a guest on the bonus episodes and share your story or something, that would be cool too. So that's my invitation to all of you. And just let it marinate and sit with it and see what happens. I think we could create some magical bonus podcast episodes if we put our heads together. So y'all have a wonderful day. Happy Monday. And I will talk to you soon.